Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure really to be here in Rome, especially given that this is my first time at the FAO. And I would like to thank Director General Graziano for the kind invitation and for the opportunity to interact with you. I'll say a few things, but really I am more interested in the interactive part, so that if you have questions, I'll try to address the issues that you attribute priority to. So as far as the WTO and FAO are concerned, we are developing and strengthening and deepening a cooperation which for us is of utmost importance. The WTO and the FAO, they have different mandates, but I clearly think that there is a lot of overlap in what we do, and we both have, of course, development at the heart of our work. But the links between the two organizations go a lot deeper than that. At the WTO, we seek to ensure that the trading system works for all, that it's fair, that it's balanced, and that it allows people to access goods and services that they need. And of course, this includes food. And I think that it is natural that our two organizations have a very strong track record in terms of collaboration. And I would like to highlight a few areas where this is particularly prominent. So first, food security. Food security is very high on our agendas. And to give a few examples, the FAO participates regularly in our Committee on Agriculture. We collaborate on many food security issues within the agricultural market information system. For example. And in addition, I'm very pleased to say that the WTO was able to take part in the preparatory work of the 2015 FAO's flagship publication, and will definitely be there for the launching of that one. Food security issues are also part of WTO's Bali package, which our members agreed to in December 2013. Bali brought the issue of food security to the top of the agenda. It was very visible. I will come back to that in a moment. The second area of collaboration that I think is important that I wanted to mention is the need to ensure that the food available is safe. Now, that, of course, it follows internationally recognized standards. And again, this is at the core of our work at the WTO and FAOs as well. So our agreement, for example, on the application of sanitary and phytosanitary measures cites, names explicitly, the FAO and WHO Codex Alimentarius and the FAO International Plant Protection Convention as standard-setting organizations in these matters, and that's extremely important even from a legal perspective in WTO work. And I think that this coordination is key to improving the coherence and consistency of both our works. A third area that I think is also important to mention is ensuring that people have the tools and the skills to produce and to access safe food. So when I visit developing countries, especially in Africa, I visited a lot of the least developed countries in Africa, and there, business people frequently, and I say frequently not to use the word always very lightly, but they tell me about the difficulties that they face in meeting required standards in the major consumer markets. And this is not something that I hear once. It's every single time that I visit, that's something that is brought to me. So capacity building in this context is essential if you want to have those producers and those businesses in small developing countries fully integrated into the international trade flows. The work of the Standards and Trade Development Facility, the STDF, supports them precisely to overcome these problems and to gain market access in those markets. Now, the FAO and the WTO are partners in the STDF, which is based in our headquarters in Geneva, as you know, And this is a really practical program, very down to earth. It has a big impact on the ground. So the STDF has developed more than 140 projects. It has provided significant support to the most vulnerable, as 50% of the program's resources are dedicated to LDCs, to the least developed countries. And it promotes also the exchange of information and good practice in capacity building on sanitary and phytosanitary measures. So in each of all these ways, I think it's clear that trade and the multilateral trading system can help in creating a more favorable environment for food security, food safety, and sustainable agriculture. And the adoption of the new Sustainable Development Goals last month, and we were both there in New York for that event, look at the SDG 2, which deals with ending hunger and achieving food security. Addressing trade restrictions and distortions in world agricultural markets and building capacity in more fragile economies will be essential if we are going to deliver the goals that we agreed to in New York. So these futures that intersect in all our areas of work of our two organizations, we have to continue to look at them together. It is clearly the WTO's intention to contribute and to contribute to the work that you do here as well. So maintaining and enhancing our initiatives will be crucial in this effort. Our partnership with the FAO can only gain even more importance. I am very pleased to say that Director General Graziano and I agreed this morning to collaborate on the issue of trade and food safety. So our teams are now going to look into how the SPS standards and food safety can facilitate trade and promote development among other related issues. And this collaboration is going to lead to a joint publication next year, fostering further action in this very important area. So look at that. Hopefully next year you're going to have some material to check on our progress in this area. So, of course, in the WTO, a big part of what we do is promote new rules, to negotiate new rules, new disciplines. We have had some major breakthroughs in the recent past. The Bali package I referred to already, it was agreed in 2013. It tackled a quite wide range of development and agriculture issues, as well as delivering what was our first multilateral agreement since the creation of the WTO, the Trade Facilitation Agreement. We had another great breakthrough in July of this year with the expansion of the Information Technology Agreement. It was the first tariff-cutting agreement since the past 18 years. It covers over $1 trillion in trade. So we have some recent inspiration. I'm pretty sure that we can follow through and do even more. At the end of the year, as was mentioned just before by the director, we will hold our 10th ministerial conference in Nairobi. It will be the first time that this meeting is being held in Africa since the WTO was launched in Marrakesh 20 years ago. So members are working hard to prepare that meeting. Let me explain to you a little bit in very short sentences what the agricultural negotiations look like. We essentially work on the basis of three pillars. So the first one is the market access pillar, which addresses trade restrictions that bear on imports, whatever they are. And that includes mostly lowering tariffs, just simple tariffs, tariff rate quotas, complex tariffs, all sorts of tariffs and barriers that are imposed at the border. Safeguards that may also be introduced. So all of these things are part of the market access pillar. Domestic support is our second pillar. It's essentially subsidies provided by governments to support programs in agriculture. The aim of those conversations is to minimize the distortions that these programs introduced. This is a particularly important area for developing countries because they think that these subsidies distort trade and affect and disrupt their production chains. This is an area where progress is very hard to come by. And the third pillar, and the last one, is export competition. So it aims to eliminate export subsidies, so direct payments on export subsidies, and all other types of measure which have an equivalent effect. So export credits is one of them, food aid programs to some extent, and the distortive elements of food aid programs, and state trading enterprises, particularly monopolies, which are disruptive as well. So those are the main three pillars. Within the WTO, there is widespread desire to include in Nairobi outcomes for agriculture. But despite all of our efforts so far, there are many areas of divergence. The gaps are still very, very high, very, very large, and members have not been able to bridge their differences. In export competition, we may see a light at the end of the tunnel, not in market access or domestic support. Those areas are stuck, firmly stuck. In export competition, we may have something. We're seeing how much we can do. An outcome here will be an extremely significant breakthrough. It will certainly be the WTO's most significant negotiated outcome on agriculture. The elimination of export subsidies in agriculture and measures with equivalent effect, as I said, would be especially important, again, to developing and to the least developed countries. And because these expenditures are at a low level today, it doesn't mean that they will stay that way. In fact, in the past, right after, for example, the crisis in 2008, these export subsidies were reintroduced by big subsidizers. So we have now a historic opportunity to lock in the gains that we have made since then and try to guarantee that these distortions are out of the picture for good. Now, outcomes even here are not assured yet. There is still a long way to go. There is not much time left. We need much more flexibility and pragmatism than we are seeing at this point in Geneva. I cannot talk about agriculture without mentioning public stock holding for food security purposes, which was also a very important element of the Bali package. At that point in time, ministers took a decision that they would not legally challenge the WTO compliance of the food stock holding programs in developing countries under certain situations. And simultaneously, they introduced an instruction for members to negotiate a permanent solution to this end, to this issue within a four-year time frame. So in November last year, members clarified this position in this decision. They decided that if there was no agreement on this permanent solution within the target four-year time frame, that the eligible programs in developing countries would remain unchallenged for their durations. So until a permanent solution is found, whenever that is. So at that point, members also expressed their commitment to make efforts to adopt this solution by December 2015. It's not a hard deadline, it's a soft deadline, but the efforts should be made. And we are, in fact, pursuing these discussions in a dedicated session in Geneva to find this permanent solution, but we're still not close to that, I have to say. So in any case, I think the Bali decision clarified last November is in force. So if we don't have a permanent solution, what we call that peace clause will go on and will continue. Now, just very briefly on cotton, which is also on the agenda for the Nairobi ministerial meeting, this is a topic of great importance for the cotton-producing least developed countries, particularly the so-called Cotton Four. While again, progress will be difficult, extremely difficult on this issue, I do believe that some important outcomes are possible in this area. So this is the picture of the agricultural negotiations in Geneva at this point in time. As I have indicated, this picture is not any rosier anywhere else in the negotiations. So despite all these difficulties, there's still the desire to deliver something in Nairobi. And I don't know exactly what it is that we're going to deliver in Nairobi, frankly, despite being just a few weeks away. But clearly there are areas that we attribute some priority. One of them is a package of development and LDC issues. So that's a bit cryptic for those of you who are not following exactly what WTO is talking about. But I don't think it's worth getting into that much now. If you want, I will during the question and answer. Also some transparency provisions which essentially improve the monitoring in some areas like fishery subsidies, anti-dumping and things like that. Again, very technical, so don't bother unless you want to. Achieving any outcomes in Nairobi will be tough, but with these potential outcomes that we see, I think we have a chance to do something which is economically important and also that will be important to the system. Now, whatever we do, it's clear that we're not going to conclude the Doha round. That's a given by now. I don't think I have to be careful in saying that. Members want to continue to deal with these issues, and these issues of the Doha round will continue on the agenda. The big question is, how are they going to be negotiated? And there is a big discussion now in Geneva whether these negotiations would happen within the framework of the Doha round and documents that we have already negotiated, agreed to, etc., or whether we need a new architecture. That's what they're discussing now in Geneva. And this is one question that we have to answer, which is the post-Nairobi framework. What are we going to do after Nairobi? So that's what I think I should give you in terms of the general outline of what's happening in Geneva. In conclusion, I would say that whatever happens in Nairobi, it will have real significance and it will have an impact on some of the big issues on your agenda here at the FAO. So I have given you a very frank assessment of the situation today, but I am still confident that the WTO can deliver things there, not only in Nairobi, but after Nairobi. I think the potential is there. Despite all the skepticism over the last 2 years, we have done a lot. We have done a lot more, frankly, than I expected when I took office. But I'm very happy that this shows how much we can do if the flexibility and the political will is there. So we're looking forward to defying negative expectations again in Nairobi and after Nairobi. Your support is going to be very important. I think, like I said, that the work that you do here overlaps a lot with what we do in the WTO, especially with agricultural issues. So we'll be engaged. I think both organizations have a big role to play in global governance, in global economic governance, for sure. And we are definitely committed to improve this coordination and this dialogue, which now takes place also with a common language from both organizations, which is a new element. But I'm very happy with what we're doing and with the kind of cooperation that we're developing. So thank you all very much for being here, for listening, for the patience. And I'm more than willing to try to answer the questions that you have in a very honest and frank way. Thank you.